Welcome to Life with Danny Duncan, where we talk about everything from nutrition, movement, and mindset to the bullshit that's been holding you back to live your best life, completely raw and unfiltered. I'm your host, Danny Duncan. I'm a featured nutrition and fitness coach, author, business owner, speaker, mum of three, including twins, and I'm going to let you into the behind the scenes of my life. Oh, and we'll have a bit of a laugh along the way, don't worry. It won't all be serious. I'm going to be the one to make you get uncomfortable with your reality and challenge you to make changes for good. So if you're feeling stuck in where you are in life and are ready to change, this podcast will unpack the reasons why you may be feeling this way and help you with tools to make changes in your life. There's no bullshit here, just real talk. So if you're ready, let's dive in. There's no time like the present. Hello and welcome back to Life with Danny Duncan. On today's podcast, we have the amazing Dr. Andrea Robinson. She is an osteopath, naturopath, nutritionist, a Pilates bar and yoga instructor, and a professional ex-dancer who danced at the Moulin Rouge in Paris, among other places. I am so excited to have this conversation today. We're talking all of things ultra-processed food, inflammation, and how what we eat impacts our overall health. So welcome, Andrea.
Thank you, Danny. I'm very excited to be here with you today. I'm super excited. I only met you a couple of weeks ago. We're both keynote speaking at an event and I just fell in love with you. So I'm really excited to be on your podcast.
Well, likewise. And I think as soon as I met you, I was like, oh, she has to be on my podcast. So I'm so glad you're here. Before we get into it, I want to know two things. First of all, just in your own words, how do you help people now? Because you've got all these things that you're an expert in, which is awesome. But how do you actually help people now?
Amazing. So I had a really big clinic in Adelaide that I sold a couple of years ago, and now I work completely in the online space, which I'm really enjoying. And I run three actual group coaching programs in different, all the things I love. So I run a bar teacher training program to teach people to be amazing bar instructors. I run a 12-week nutrition mindset movement program to help women over 35 lose weight and just lead a long, healthy life.
Amazing.
And that's been so successful that I now teach other practitioners and coaches how to take their expertise into the online space as well. So that's amazing. It in a nutshell.
Amazing, amazing. So before we get going, I always ask all my guests a question. So what is your most laugh out loud, cringeworthy moment?
Oh my God, you didn't tell me this in advance to think about this. Okay, the first one that pops into my mind, and at the moment in time that it happened, it wasn't laugh out loud, but now I think about it and it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But at the Moulin Rouge when I was dancing, we did the Can-Can, which is very famous for the Moulin Rouge in Paris. And there's this little square on the floor, little cross on the floor on the stage that you had to do your first cartwheel, where your hand had to go over the top of that cross, otherwise you'd bang legs with the girl who was coming behind you in air. So you had to do this like spin, spin, step, 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 hand down. On count seven, it was always seven, down, up. And the girl before me one night didn't obviously get her hand on the floor. I come cartwheeling behind her. She didn't cross the mark and we hit legs in the air, upside down. All of a sudden I'm on my bottom just looking at the audience.
Oh my God.
What do you do? Jump up, shake your skirt, run up, shout the can-can, like cheer and then run on.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Just ending up on the floor though, looking out at the audience like, hi.
I know. And in a little bit of shock, like, hang on, where am I? How did I get here?
Totally. And I've been to the Moulin Rouge, that it's all happening so fast.
Oh yeah, that music is fast.
Yeah. Oh my God, so fun. Oh my gosh, I was always far too short for the Moulin Rouge, but I had to apply and get told, you're too short. So
yes, no, they like tall girls there.
They do. Awesome. All right, let's get into it. Ultra processed food. I have been banging on about including more whole foods in your nutrition and diet for ages now. And it seems finally I'm seeing some articles and media come out with some great research, which is awesome because I feel like it's just been hanging in the background for too long about the long-term impacts of consuming ultra processed food. So what are the reasons that ultra processed food aren't great for us? And what are ultra processed foods for those that don't know and are new to this space?
Yeah. So ultra-processed foods are really foods that have been, I use the expression fiddled with, like they've been taken away from their natural state. So if you pick, I don't know, go to the garden and pick a tomato, that's a beautiful natural food. But if you get a tin of tomatoes and you turn the back of the packet over and you see the ingredients list has got tomatoes, water, salt, and then some additives and perhaps preservatives, that in Australia we see them as numbers on the back. If your listeners are in the US or Canada, you might see them written down as the actual names. That's what a processed food is. It's where food's been taken away from the natural state and other things have been added to it to make it, you know, a different flavor or longer shelf life with a preservative and or thickening it up a little bit. So there's thickeners and emulsifiers and that's to make fat not like coagulate and like all stay in the same kind of consistency and then the flavors and the preservatives. So that's what an ultra processed food is. So the opposite of that is something that's really natural.
Yeah, and whole foods. And is there, there's obviously a difference. I mean, I know we've got whole foods and then we've got processed foods because a lot of the foods we eat are processed, like nuts and grains, and have to be processed, right? Flours for us to eat. I mean, I mean, I know there's people that live a whole food life and then grain and mill their own things. I'm not quite there. And processed is fine, right? Like we have to eat some processed foods, but then there's the ultra processed and that has the additives, emulsifiers and all those other things. Basically, I suppose the way I say it, if you can't make it in your kitchen, then it's an ultra-processed food.
Yeah, that's right. So if you're talking about the difference between processed foods, like a flour that you could grind at home, if you buy a packet of flour at the supermarket that has been pre-ground for you, it's not going to have those numbers added to it. So that's the big difference, really, if you're on the supermarket shelf. If, like you say, you know, if you can't make it in your kitchen, my big thing is like no numbers. I always talk about no numbers.
Yeah. And people just need to get used to, I mean, we talk about this, turning the packet over and reading the label, right? Yeah. And what are the main reasons that ultra-processed food aren't good for us?
Well, gosh, the big thing, so many things, but the big thing really, it disrupts our gut microbiome. And I know you and I want to have a bit of a chat about the gut today, but our gut microbiome is the balance of bacteria inside of our intestinal tract. And those bacteria all have jobs to do. Some of them have jobs that act in a positive way for our body and some have jobs that are perhaps having a negative effect. And so the ultra-processed foods tend to those bacteria that have the positive effect tend to have a negative impact on them. So it can cause this disruption on our gut microbiome. And what that can lead to is something called leaky gut, or the fancy name for that is called increased intestinal hyperpermeability syndrome. Very long tongue twister there.
Big word.
And I'm super passionate about leaky gut. Like there's, I don't know if you can link show notes afterwards, but I've got this fabulous diagram I'd love to share with your audience about leaky gut, how it works. But let me explain that a little bit because I think understanding how that all works is really good.
Yeah.
So there's things that can cause leaky gut, and ultra-processed foods are one of them when we have too many of them. There's other things that can contribute as well. So high stress or a long-term kind of chronic stress. Food intolerances. So if you have any intolerances to gluten or certain dairy foods or even any, like there's so many different foods that can cause intolerances. Gluten and dairy and sugar are the three most common ones for some people, not for everyone. And then if there's a parasite underlying in there and an imbalance, or if there's already an imbalance of the good and bad gut bacteria. So all of these things can kind of contribute, plus certain medications can contribute as well to this leaky gut. And what happens, we have food that comes in through our intestinal tract from our mouth down to our anus at the end. But along the way, our body creates digestive enzymes, right, starting in our saliva and from our stomach and from our pancreas into the digestive system. And those digestive enzymes break foods down. So they do get broken down to small enough molecules that then can get absorbed through the cell lining of the gut. And so the cell lining of the gut is only one cell thick.
Okay.
So it's very, 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 very thin. On each cell is little finger things like this called villi. And on top of each villi are more little tiny hairs called microvilli. So the food particles should come into the gut. They should be broken down enough by our digestive enzymes and the bacteria help break them down, the good bacteria. They should be broken down small enough to be absorbed through the villi, through the microvilli, through the cell into the bloodstream underneath to be used by the body as energy.
Yeah, perfect.
What happens in leaky gut are little cells that are lined up along here, like the stomach, along the I know some people are going to be listening. I'm using my hands to demonstrate. If you're watching the video, it'll be helpful. So there's little cells that are one next to each other. These cells can come apart. So that's why we call it leaky gut, and they're little things called tight junctions can come apart. And an unhealthy tight junction, the cells come apart, and substances that are too big and shouldn't be absorbed at all through the cell can leak between the cells into the bloodstream. And so the body identifies those substances. They can be little parasites or they can be bigger amounts of food particles that should be broken down smaller to be absorbed. The body sees them as a foreign object and creates an immune response against them.
Okay.
And so you can get this ongoing low-grade immune response, which creates systemic inflammation, which, you know, I'm very passionate about talking about.
Yes.
And alongside that, there's all sorts of other things that can happen too. So we can get brain fog or brain disruption from this low-grade activation of the immune system. We can get skin issues like eczema or psoriasis or hives or rashes or more susceptibility.
Yeah.
And then there's more incidence of food intolerances, and there's an increased burden on the liver, and then there's an increased risk factor for autoimmune disease. Like there's just so yes. much that can happen because of these food intolerances. Your body can kind of get into a vicious cycle of more and more irritability to certain foods. And I have clients that sometimes come to me that can only eat five foods. Like they've been down this path for so long that their gut is so unhappy and the leaky gut is so high, and we can measure leaky gut through a marker called zonulin, so we can test for that on a stool test. Okay. But I had a client I'm just thinking of right now that I'm working off, her zonulin is so high and she literally is down to five foods that she can eat.
Can that be repaired? Like, can
It's going to be a long road. And it's interesting with her, like, she's complicated, but we did a couple of tests and she's got leaky gut, but she's also got something called SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and really bad gut dysbiosis in the large bacteria as well, which is large bowel, where the bacteria is imbalanced between the good and the bad. It's kind of a general way of talking about it. It's not quite like that. Like, every bacteria is good there in some way, but we just don't want the bad ones too much and the good ones too low. We don't have to get rid of bad ones, they just need to be less than the good ones. I was like, yes, we need to take this out and take this out of your nutrition and put this in and put this in. Well, her body was just, it was too much for her too soon. So I had to pair it right back, and we're getting there. Like, she's about 3 weeks into treatment with me. This week she's had days of no stomach pain, whereas she was bloating and stomach pain every day. A bit more variety in our foods, but it's probably be, I think, a year journey for her to be feeling really decent again. But this is like 20 years of.
And is this 20 years of eating ultra processed food, not looking after your gut, not drinking enough water, not eating enough vegetables, all these sorts of things?
Hers was really, you know how I said at the start of leaky gut explanation, there's different factors that come in. Yes, some of that stuff for her, but mostly it was a big stress. So it was after a really big stressful event in her life that it kicked off.
We know that our guts and our brains are connected, right? Like, directly connected. So stress is going to impact our gut directly. And it's funny because I actually have IBS, right? And when I was a child, I had so much pain growing up, and I always went to, my mum's a doctor, and we tried so many different things. I had a barrier meal. We'd eliminate nuts, then onions and garlic, and we just couldn't put our finger on it. And then as my journey has gone on and my life has gone on and I've grown up and I've learnt more and educated myself more and done my qualifications and things, I realised in the last probably 10 years that my IBS, or maybe everyone's IBS, I find that a lot of my clients have the same results as me when I tell them this. When I switch to a low GI, less processed diet combined with less stress, I have no pain.
So, it's amazing what good nutrition can do.
It's amazing. And it's funny because not that I ever ate a huge amount of ultra processed food, but, you know, actually thinking back into my teen years and 20s, I absolutely ate too much ultra processed food because I was a teenager and I was living by myself in Melbourne and I was eating McDonald's and, you know, snacks and crackers and cereals and all these things. And I was highly stressed. And then into my 20s, also not great. But to be honest, I did eat better into my 20s and the symptoms did subside. And then when I had my divorce and highly stressed again and started eating badly again, the symptoms came back. And this is when I was started to go, ah, okay. And so I absolutely know when I'm going to get some stomach pains now, 100%. Give me some long grain rice or normal potatoes or white bread or even just ultra processed food. What did I have not long ago? And I was like, I cannot eat that. Oh, cream?
Oh.
Cream is horrendous. Oh. And then if I'm stressed at the same time, nightmare.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nightmare. The stress just adds another whole layer in there, doesn't it? Whole layer. It really does.
For sure.
But what I see too, Danny, with lots of the women I work with, like I work with mostly the age group that's 35 and over and kind of getting into those perimenopause years, is that when we have leaky gut, it can really disrupt the whole endocrine system. So our stress hormones, reproductive hormones and thyroid hormones. And I talk about them like a bit of a triangle. I always say they're at one point of the triangle each. And if one's affected, the other two are going to be affected. But as soon as the gut is unhappy, like it really causes this inflammatory response and the rest of the body kind of jumps on the board, and you'll see, you know, PMS and, oh my gosh, my women in their 40s, lots of night sweats and tummy weight gain and brain fog is really big.
I've got a lot of women that have like PCOS, endometriosis or fibromyalgia, and to be honest, it might sound a bit dramatic, but 2 weeks into working with me, eating more whole foods, reducing the stress, their symptoms severely lowered. Like they're like, what's going on? I thought I was going to be like this forever. And I'm like, I know. And so any of those, especially my fibromyalgia clients, I've got three major ones, like three girls that have worked with me ongoing. And they are doing things they never thought they'd be able to do again, just from changing their nutrition and their stress levels.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, fibromyalgia is very much an unexplained disease. Like it's a disease or a label by diagnosis of exclusion. Like, and same, so is IBS. Like the doctors go, we don't really know what's wrong with you, so we're going to label you with fibromyalgia, label you with IBS.
Yeah. But I don't even know, like you said that, you know, it's funny you said that actually, because when I said it before, I've got IBS. And when I say it now to people, I kind of think, do I though? Or does everyone have an issue with stress and ultra-processed food? Because
possibly, darling. And it's like, you know, years of stuff that can happen. And I see it, and our bodies, I don't know, there's another approach I talk about it with my patients and clients too, that yes, these things have happened to give us, like if I'm working as an osteopath, to give us back pain, or when I'm doing working my work as a nutritionist, to give us gut issues. Like I think all of these things come from what's happened in our life before. And so we can reframe how we look at them and say, well, these are from the stories of us living this wonderful life, like I got to live in Paris and eat croissants, and you got to eat McDonald's. Like even though we don't want to eat McDonald's now, but that was a privilege, because there's a lot of people that don't have that privilege of eating something like that.
Yeah.
So the stories, if we look at the things that are going on with our body as a story of what's happened in our past, then we can see that as a positive rather than a negative. Absolutely. And when we can reframe, it takes a lot of the stress away from it as well.
Yeah.
And also makes it think, well, if this is something that's happened in the past, I can get better and I can heal as long as I choose a different approach to go forwards with.
Oh my God, I love that you've said all that. I don't know if you've heard me say, but I always say, and I've just finished actually reading a book called The Midlight Library, which is very similar to what you've just said, but people ask me all the time, do I have any regrets? And I always say, I don't have one regret, because everything that I've been through, health, trauma, is all just a learning curve, and I wouldn't be here I am today with the knowledge I have without that. And I think one thing, potentially, this is going to be blowing my own, tooting my own horn for a second, but one reason I think I connect really well with a lot of women is because I've been through a lot of things and I've experienced stuff. And when you've been there, I can say, yes, I've actually have been through stages where I'm bloated, pain, and this is what I've done about it, you know, because people love putting a label on themselves because it makes them feel like something is wrong with them as well. Whereas when you go, actually, there's nothing really wrong with you, but this is what we can change to make you feel better. And like you said, it's just part of your story. And yeah, like I don't regret any of those years with all those McFlurries down Swanson Street. Yum. Yeah, I couldn't have it now.
So funny. I grew up in the country, so I wasn't allowed to have, we didn't even have McDonald's near us. So
well, there you go. So something that came up actually was really funny. We were talking about this earlier, but you and I both know we turn over the packets. I mean, we know a lot about ultra processed food and what's in foods, but people are still very uneducated. And what I'm trying to do, and I don't know what you're trying to do, is educate people more just to eat more whole foods so that we can be the best versions of ourselves, right? And live a long life. Because, you know, when did ultra processed foods come in? Really around the 50s it was started. But prior to that, there was no ultra processed foods, you know? And so we actually don't know really the long-term effect that this is going to have the more we eat, right? Which is a bit scary, because already chronic disease is up, obesity is up, hugely. Yeah. I think in 1970, the obesity rate was something like 28%, and it's like 68% now. Yeah, you know, crazy. Don't quote me on those numbers, but it's around that. So yeah, I'm all about education. So I went to Woolworths the other day and I was getting some cheese, and I thought, oh, while I'm here, I'm just going to show everyone this because they probably aren't aware. And I showed them that, turn the packets over, a block of cheese is different to a packet of grated cheese, because in a packet of grated cheese, there are preservative 202 and anti-caking agent, right? So preservatives and additives. And I put it on TikTok, and TikTok is savage, Andrea. Oh my God. I am probably too old for TikTok, but I'm actually also glad that I'm 38 and very strong and okay with who I am, because you get hounded there.
I'm the same, Jenny. I've done a couple of TikTok videos and I kind of like put it to the side because I was playing around with TikTok of maybe a year or so ago, and I did something very similar. I went to the supermarket and I said, you know, when you're choosing something, look at the back of the packets. Either you can choose this one or this one, and this is the reason why you would choose this one, and this is the reason why you wouldn't choose this one.
Yeah.
Wow. The comments.
My God.
Attacked me first of all, but then they just started attacking each other. So I just like sat back and watched. But some of my
popcorn
videos
popcorn out and just
Some of my videos have just had over a million views, and they're all still fighting each other years, like a year later.
Yeah, no, it's really funny. I got completely attacked, which is absolutely fine. I don't mind being attacked. It's I put myself out there. I have to, but yeah, I got told I was fear mongering and don't worry because 202 is just sulfates and anti-caking is cellulose and it's all fine and it's all natural. And I was like, it's not natural. Just because you can find cellulose in something and you can find, doesn't mean sulfates and things, doesn't mean what they've put into this cheese is natural. And so without fear mongering, why should we potentially be avoiding sulfates and anti-caking agents?
It's just these foods are, they're not even foods. These additions to food are not natural. And so it's all the things we were speaking about before, Danny. Like they're proven to disrupt the gut microbiome. They really are. And in fact, it's becoming, like it's been well known in my profession as a naturopath for many years, but it's becoming even well known that this is a key thing in the mainstream medical thing. So another little story, my partner's got Crohn's, well, had Crohn's disease before he met me, and now he's been hanging around with me for a year and a half and he's eating beautiful foods.
Yeah.
And he had a follow-up colonoscopy in December and completely clear. So his Crohn's disease, which is, it's an irritable bowel disease with ulcers in the small intestine, that had completely cleared. The gastroenterologist said, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And he said, you know, the number one thing, this is the gastroenterologist, to avoid is foods with additives and preservatives and artificial stuff added in. Like this is mainstream medical now that this amazing knowledge and information is coming across. And he's like, that's the number one thing you should really avoid.
And I mean, let's be honest, when it comes to cheese, just grate your own. Like, let's stop being fucking lazy, right? Like, seriously. And it's more expensive anyway. I never understand. It's the convenience thing. I think we've become really lazy in this day and age and we're all about convenience. Yeah. But I love those stories. I love hearing stories of people healing through nutrition. I have a client at the moment actually who came to me, and the reason, you know, it took her this to get to me, but that's great. You know, she's only 37 and high cholesterol and really low iron. She's going to have a blood infusion and she was going to have go on medication for cholesterol. And she's like, I'm 37, how? So she had her test done, I think it was 2 weeks before coaching started, and then she had it 4 weeks into coaching. Cholesterol all the way down, no need for medication, and iron all the way up. I know, because he tingles. Amazing. She's like, oh my God. She's like, how? I'm like, it's what you put in your body. And I think we were discussing before, and I mean, I probably go 90-10. You're probably similar when it comes to occasional food versus, but we say 80-20 to give everyone that
20%. More 90-10 as well.
I'm probably more 90-10. But, you know, if you are only having 20% of your diet as ultra-processed occasional food and you are, say, and that would include, and this is the thing that people don't understand, people would put cheese in a whole food section or the 80%, when really if you're getting the grated cheese and you've got the additives and preservatives, it now has to go into the 20%. And so once you start to add up all the things that are ultra processed. So, you know, you've got grated cheese and then you have a muesli bar and then you have your cereal for breakfast and then ham for lunch. And then all of a sudden what you think is 20% and healthy, you're actually not, right?
No, 100%. And I love that reel that you did recently about that when you're at your kitchen bench and you were talking about what 20% looks like, what whole foods versus ultra processed looks like, because it's stuff that people think is healthy.
Totally.
Like Weet-Bix, people think is healthy, but it's ultra processed food.
Yeah. Does it, like, I always say, like, have a think. Does a Weet-Bix look like a food? Like, think about it. Really think about it. Because everyone gets drawn into the label, right? We have literally been molded as a society to believe the marketing, right? 25% less sugar, full of fiber, full of vitamins. So people go, oh my God, miss that product. Do you know what else is full of fiber and vitamins? Vegetables and grains.
Exactly.
It's like, hang on, just think, use your brain. I think we've stopped using our brain and we're just that convenience factor that, you know, believing the manufacturers, it's just become, huge.
Yep, 100%, darling. Like, just, I mean, it's just that expression too, just eat real food, like just really focus on eating real food and as true to its natural state as you possibly can.
Yeah. So I know you're really passionate about gut health, and we've already talked about it a little bit, and you've had your own experiences, which is why obviously you're so passionate about it and your own journey when it comes to your gut health and things like that. I'd love to know though, which foods, or everyone, let's talk to everyone about what foods actually cause inflammation. So what should we be? I don't think you even say avoid, but I think you say reduce in our diets.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you love this because I spoke about it in the little keynote speech when you and I was first met, but there's five food groups that are most likely to cause chronic inflammation and kind of affect the gut microbiome and affect the gut lining and all sorts of things. And so we have sort of three different categories. We've got metabolic disruptors, which is sugar and alcohol. So they disrupt our metabolism. We've got digestive and immune disruptors, so that's wheat and dairy. This is not for everyone either. This is just for some people.
Yeah.
And then processed vegetable oils. So they're the vegetable oils that are higher in omega-6s than omega-3 fatty acids. So we need both of those. But if a food is much higher in omega-6s, that's much more pro-inflammatory in the body. When it comes to sugar, it's almost like sugar attaches to our cells like little bits of sticky chewing gum or something. Our immune system doesn't like that. It sees it like an attack on the body and starts to create an immune response against that, almost to defend the body against it. So that goes back into what we're talking about with leaky gut and causes this low-grade systemic inflammation because it's that low-grade activation of the immune system. And so fructose can also, fructose is one of the sugars that's probably a little bit worse than the others, and it really leads to insulin resistance as well as this kind of low-grade chronic inflammation. And insulin resistance is something we don't want either.
No,
because there's a whole other kick on. Maybe we need to do another podcast another day, Danny, about insulin resistance, because it's like a whole podcast in one topic there.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you think about sugar, just know that fruit is fine, because when sugars are mixed with fiber, it doesn't cause insulin resistance because the fiber added in there stops a big glucose spike and our bodies are much better with that.
But so it's when we have that. So, yeah, so you're talking about like your refined added sugars, not the sugar in fruit. That's fine. Okay,
that's
so when
fine.
It's mixed
but
with fiber,
again,
it's fine.
But then again, like if we talk about an orange and a glass of orange juice.
Yes.
A glass of orange juice has had a lot of the fiber taken out.
Yes.
So it will give you a much bigger glucose spike than an orange that's got fiber in it, and it'll be a much smaller glucose spike when you eat this in your bloodstream afterwards. And it's when we have lots of high glucose spikes that our body starts to develop insulin resistance over time.
Yep.
So even though orange juice may not have any additives added, it's been fiddled with. So it's been taken away from its natural state. It's not an orange anymore. It's an orange juice that's had the fiber taken out. So it's better if we can avoid that kind of thing as well.
And what about the sugars from like low GI carbohydrates like sweet potatoes, grains, those sorts of things? What about those sugars?
Fine, darling, because they've got much more fiber added. So you're going to have a much lower glucose spike in the body than a glass of Coca-Cola or orange juice.
Yeah, cool. Or the sugar in your tea. I think it's really important for people to understand, because I know a lot of people go, sugar's bad. I'm not going to eat fruit. I shouldn't eat bread. I shouldn't eat this. And it's like, no, hang on. We're not talking about those sugars. We're talking about these refined added sugars and those without fiber. So I think that's really important to note, which is really good. So thank you.
100%, 100%. And then the next one on my list is alcohol.
Yeah.
And so I actually personally don't drink at all anymore, because I've learned over the years that my body doesn't like it. I don't feel good afterwards, and I really like feeling good. So I'm really happy to miss that. But what it does, it also causes metabolic inflammation in the body. So it's a big kick on effect after that. But it disrupts something called our HPA axis, and that's our hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenal. So they're two parts of our brain, and our adrenals sit above our kidneys, and they're our stress organs. So even though you think you need wine to help you calm down at night, it's actually having a negative impact and making your body go into more of a stress response and decreases your ability to cope with stresses over the long run, plus has a negative impact on the gut microbiome. So you can see like lots of little things coming in with alcohol.
Yeah, and changing over. And what I love about this, so it's not unknown that I love a wine and I love a champagne and a cocktail. I used to drink like a fish in my 20s, probably like most people in their 20s, and put me in a wedding and yes, I'll probably have 3 or 4 champagnes. However, like you, as my journey continues and I learn more and I learn more about my body, I also don't sleep very well when I drink.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
When I was going through my divorce, absolutely. What did I do? I picked up the bottle. But what I tell my clients now, what I do now is if you are reaching for a glass of alcohol when you are stressed or to try and cope, like I've had a hard day or the kids are being bratty, I'm going to have a wine, or I'm stressed or I've lost my job. The answer is no, you definitely do not want a wine. And my clients are not allowed to drink if that is why. They're only allowed to drink if they're going, I'm in a good space, I'm having a great day, I'm feeling really good about myself. And the funny thing is, when you're in that space, what do you not really want? A drink, because you're like,
yeah, that's right. Don't need it.
You don't need it. So I find that most of my clients actually reduce their alcohol incredibly. And even now for me, I will have, 1, 2. I mean, not now because I'm pregnant, but because, and I think as well, understanding that if you have it, the consequences of that are X, Y, Z.
Definitely. And you see it all the time. Like you were saying with you, Danny, it really messes up your sleep. And then that has a kick on effect after that as well.
Totally.
Like sleep is so important for our health.
Totally. It's funny because we went to, I've got this new watch. It's about a year old now, this Garmin. I'm showing it again the camera. No one can see it. So it's a Garmin.
Nice.
And it tracks your sleep, right? Chris and I went to see Robbie Williams in November, just the two of us, no kids for the weekend. And I had, yeah, maybe four champagnes that night, maybe five. And I thought in my head, I was like, you know, it's okay because I can have like 9 hours sleep because the kids aren't here, right? And even though I had 9 hours, 15 minutes sleep, my watch said, you didn't have a restorative sleep.
There you go.
I was like, what a waste of my 9 hours, 15 minutes.
Yeah, it does it. My partner's got a Whoop band. Have you heard of those?
Yes, I have heard of those. Yeah.
He's obsessed with it. And I giggle because I think it's kind of telling you stuff that you already know about yourself.
I didn't sleep well last night.
My Whoop says I didn't sleep well.
Yeah. And I think you have to be careful with these things because I go like this. I don't feel good. I'm not. And then I look at the watch. Like, how do I feel first? Because otherwise I can be influenced by what it says. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to go, oh, my watch says I didn't have a good night's sleep. But what if you actually feel quite recovered? You know, you don't want that to impact. But, it was
like,
interesting.
It's like your Garmin, Danny. Mike's Whoop always tells him he's had a bad sleep when he's had alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah,
non-restorative. He knows that anyway because he hasn't slept well, but yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So interesting one about alcohol. And I know it's a hard one to give up because people associate alcohol with fun as well, right? So it's about knowing that you can still have fun and enjoy yourself without alcohol.
100%, absolutely.
Yeah.
So should I talk about the other little bits on my list?
Yes, keep going.
So the two like digestive or immune disruptors is wheat and dairy.
Yeah.
And so wheat and gluten affect some people more than others. This, again, it's not everybody. It really depends on your sort of genetic susceptibility or predisposition to this. Mm-hmm. And it also depends on the state of your gut microbiome. So if your gut's really healthy, you'll be able to tolerate gluten and dairy and wheat. And if it's not so healthy, maybe you've got more leaky gut and then you're not as tolerant of these foods anymore.
Yeah.
But I see wheat as a major issue, so major issue in about 1 in 10 people.
Okay.
But it's a minor issue in about 6 in 10. So it's quite common that it can be even a minor issue.
Yeah.
And for the rest of you listening, if you're not in the 1 or the 6, like it won't be a problem.
Yeah.
But then we think about it can be a problem with wheat itself or gluten itself. And if it's a problem with gluten, it can be celiac disease, which is an actual allergy.
Yeah.
Where you must not have any gluten. Or it can be non-celiac gluten sensitivity. And this is really common. And I have this. So that's where I react and I make sure I stay away from gluten because my body just does not like gluten, but I'm not celiac.
Even with a healthy gut microbiome, this still affects you, even with lots of veggies and lots of good fiber.
Yeah. You know what, darling, because similar to you, I had a really bad health episode in my early 30s and I was fine with all of this until then. And so my journey started with ending up in hospital, having a seizure and I think they thought I had a brain tumor.
Yeah.
And my naturopath who I worked with at the time thought I would be able to get back to eating gluten and wheat, but it just never got to that point. And then I went and did IVF.
Yeah.
And so four rounds of that later, again, you know, we talked about medications disrupting your gut microbiome.
Mm.
And I knew it would have a negative impact, but, you know, really wanted to try and have children. And so I thought, well, I'll go through this process and I know how to heal myself afterwards. And that's probably been 9 or 8 years now, years since I did that. And I feel really well again now. And if I have a little bit of gluten, I'm fine, but I just know my body's still sensitive. And it's just the stories that have happened to us in our past that kind of add up to where we are now.
Totally.
My gut is good, except when I'm not as good, I guess.
Yes. Well, absolutely. And that's the thing. I think it's just being in control of understanding your body, right? And understanding, you know, I suppose it's about taking like responsibility for your actions.
Yep.
Like if you're not going to eat enough vegetables, if you're not going to look after your gut, if you're going to drink too much alcohol, and then like you said, then gluten probably will be something. And then gluten sometimes then gets blamed, right?
Yeah.
Then we blame it. Oh, I must be gluten intolerant. I must be, well, not necessarily. You might actually just be having, to be honest, you might be the combination of all these things.
That's right.
Yeah, you said medications as well, like, you know, the IVF medications and antibiotics and all those sorts of things. If you're, you know, pumping your body through all of those a lot, even things like paracetamol, Nurofen, all those sorts of things will impact your gut microbiome. And, you know, I don't take really anything anymore unless I absolutely have to. And again, probably another reason my gut is better now because I don't do that anymore. And because of the way I've changed my lifestyle as well, I actually I haven't had a migraine since I was pregnant with Harper. So she's turning 6 this year and I don't get headaches. I used to get chronic headaches all the time. So I used to take migraine medication, Panadol, Nurofen, Panadine 4, like all the time. And I cannot remember the last time I even popped a Panadol now.
So good, Danny. I have another similar story with that too. Like I used to get these things, I call them my upside down headaches.
Oh, yeah.
Because it would be when I would like bend over and the pressure would increase in my head. And so it was all from my sinuses, that increased pressure. But I will still get an upside down headache if I have dairy. But if I just stay off dairy, I never get any headaches.
And like you said, everyone is different in that space, right? So you're obviously sensitive to that. Like, I would not say I'm sensitive to anything in regards to wheat and dairy, but those high GI foods for sure. Definitely.
Yeah, interesting. Whereas I can tolerate high GI foods, but not the wheat and dairy. So I can have the white potatoes, no trouble. Yeah. Like, and we're all so different. This is the thing.
Yeah, dairy actually, now I think about it, no, too much dairy, I'm not good. Small amounts at a time.
Tolerance. So that brings me to dairy. And this is really interesting too, Danny, because some people will have trouble with the dairy sugar, which is lactose, and some people will have trouble with the dairy protein, which is casein.
Yeah,
like an A1 casein, and some people won't have a problem with either.
Yeah.
So again, it's just learning how to know what the differentiation of those are and different bits of dairy food and listening to your body for that. But I always say to my clients, like they often say, how do I know if I've got a casein intolerance? You know, like how do I know? But it often shows up like if you were that child that had recurrent tonsillitis or recurrent ear infections and were on lots of antibiotics when you're young, that's kind of a bit of an indication that maybe there might be an A1 casein, but it also intolerance. But it can also show up now as like eczema or asthma or sinus infections, even acne or period pain or PMS or heavy periods. So lots of kick-on effects from that A1 casein intolerance as well.
And the A1 protein obviously is prevalent in lots of milks, which is why you are able to get that A2 milk now, which is great. And I know on purpose when I had twins and Harper, we just went to the A2 protein formulas as well because you know, babies' guts are so sensitive. So should we be avoiding A1 protein or just understanding?
I think understanding and just really learning to listen to your body, because not everyone is going to be having a problem with it. It's only part of our, you know, some of us, if we have that genetic susceptibility, and again, if all of those ground things are not in place, like the gut microbiome's not working well, and if you're having lots of other ultra-processed foods, your gut won't tolerate it as well.
Yeah.
But there's either lactose or the A1 casein or nothing. And so don't know what, or both. Like we don't know what you're going to react to until, I mean, with my clients, we go through an elimination and we reintroduce dairy in a way that we can figure out what are the elements that may or may not be causing problems. So that's really the only way you can find out is to do an elimination reintroduction.
Yeah, okay, cool. I love this conversation because it literally is all about eating more whole foods, good foods, and balance, right? Like we're not sitting here going, don't eat this, don't eat that. It's just going, eat lots of this, but be aware and understand what is in other foods that you're potentially consuming too much of, you know? And it's funny because I was saying on Instagram the other day, and I think you replied, you're like, yes, I love this, Danny, about coaches giving advice and it's all being about calories. Like here, like you're trying to lose weight. So here, stick to your low calorie snack. Here are five low calorie snack options or five. And it's just junk and shit. And it's like you are telling people to eat low calorie things at the detriment to their nutrition. And so then I get people saying to me, but Danny, if I am on a fat loss diet, I do like the low calorie snack options because it means I can eat. I'm like, but you can still lose fat and not eat low calorie snack options. Am I right?
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Because you also, I know you don't, you don't track calories or anything like that.
No, I'm not into the calorie counting at all. I don't do that with my clients at all. And they all lose significant amounts of weight by just eating real food. Yeah. And when you eat the right amount of nutrients that your body needs in like the macronutrients like proteins or carbohydrates or fats, healthy fats, and eat real food, like you're and not in an inflammatory state, you will lose weight to get back to what your body likes to be naturally. Like there's all this beautiful natural space. And that's why we don't do a restrictive diet when I work with my clients, because as long as we eat the right amounts of foods, the hunger and cravings disappears and we just don't need to overeat then. So I think when we can focus on the natural stuff, it all kind of comes out in the wash. But for weight loss, there does have to be a calorie restriction. You can get that without counting food, just by nourishing your body with enough protein, enough healthy fats. You tend to not overeat and you don't eat that snacky kind of stuff.
Totally. I mean, it's so easy to overeat when you eat ultra processed food. It's very easy. You know, I was just saying to Brooke actually before, yesterday I had some leftover roast veggies I'd done in the oven, a little bit of quinoa and tuna. And I do track calories. I do. And it's more, I don't call it counting. I call it tracking because I want you guys to make sure you're having enough protein. I want to make sure you're actually having enough calories because a lot of people say when they start eating more whole foods, they do struggle to get enough food, right? Because
Absolutely.
It's hard. It's really hard to go over your calories when you eat whole food. And I think it was like 290 calories, which is, you know, sometimes half the amount of calories I'd sometimes have for lunch. But the amount of vegetables on my plate, like I was full.
Yeah.
You know, pumpkin, tomatoes, I had chickpeas in there as well, you know, zucchinis, yeah. Like so many beautiful things. And it is really hard. Like you get full, you're like, actually, now I'm satisfied without having to, yeah.
Yeah. Because it just completely gets rid of hunger and cravings when you are nourishing your body with the right amounts of those macronutrients, proteins, carbohydrates, fats. Totally. As soon as you start eliminating any of those, and if you count calories and have the low calorie snack options, you're usually eliminating one of those major food groups.
100%.
In some way. And then and then your body needs them. So then the cravings keep coming in.
People just want this quick fix though, Andrea, don't they? Like what impact is this going to have on their long-term health if they get this quick fix, they lose the fat? Because a lot of the time they do. I've worked with so many clients who go, oh, Danny, I've done every diet under the sun. I've lost 20 kilos five times.
Yeah.
Put it on five times, six
times. It's worked for the long run, hasn't it?
Yeah. So what is the long-term impact and how do we stop people focusing on quick fixes? And I suppose it's just about getting our message out there, right?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, exactly what you're doing with this podcast, Danny, is about education. I really believe knowledge is power. It's the most important thing that we understand why we're doing what we're doing. Because otherwise, if someone says, eat this and you'll lose weight, you probably will. But if you don't understand why you're doing what you're doing, you won't be able to make that become a sustainable long-term approach to nutrition. Yes. But really, that restrictive dieting doesn't work for the long term. We just have to nourish our bodies full of beautiful whole foods, low in processed foods, lots of mix, lots of variety. Like variety is so important for the gut microbiome as well of all the fruits and veggies. Yeah. So that's kind of the long term is the education thing and that's how we can stop focusing on that quick fix solution.
Yeah.
But the impact for the long term, I don't want to finish on a negative of this question, but the impact on the long term is kind of what we're talking about before, that poor gut health leading to the leaky gut like we're talking about before, the thyroid dysfunction and thyroid really – thyroid is your metabolism. When people talk about their metabolism as slow or fast, they're talking about their thyroid gland. And we don't want a slow or a fast thyroid. We want a flexible thyroid and a flexible metabolism so they can adjust to external and internal factors that are happening within our body.
Yeah.
All of that gets disrupted when we go for these quick fix options. Totally. Like the amount of women, and you would have seen it too, that have done the dieting for their whole life, restricted diets, and then they end up in their 40s with autoimmune thyroid disease. Totally. Like you just see it. Time and time again.
And then you're more at risk to chronic disease, right? And cancer and type 2 diabetes.
Well,
and
I don't know
disease.
About cancer, but definitely when you've gathered one autoimmune disease, you will gather other autoimmune diseases. Yeah, and the thing that sets you up for gathering autoimmune diseases is inflammation. And so that also has a link to cancer. So we can't necessarily say it causes and leads to it, but it's the underlying factor of inflammation that can lead to a greater risk factor for chronic diseases.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you something that actually we didn't talk about, but I'm ask it anyway. So we've talked about all these healthy, great, nourishing foods. Let everyone know, what do you have as your 10%? Like what is your like, chocolate. Surely you eat something that's like, yeah, that's not on the list of amazing foods to consume.
Chocolate, Danny. Chocolate. But do you know what happens with that? Maybe too much information, but chocolate makes me really constipated and I'll have it. And I go, oh, why did I have this? Like, I just like, I like my bowels working really well. It makes me feel good. And so when that doesn't happen, I'm like, oh, okay, no chocolate for a little while. And there's so many beautiful alternatives. Like there's the Loco Love chocolate that comes from Byron Bay. It's divine. Yeah. It's all natural, no processed, no dairy, which is no good for me. And so there's lots of other beautiful options as well. And I can have a vegan chocolate works okay for me. So I can tolerate a little bit of sugar, but not too much.
Yeah.
Just the dairy piece. So there's a, I can't remember the brand of it, but there's a vegan chocolate that I'll have sometimes. And I love a good potato chip.
Occasionally. Yeah. Yum. Yum. Yeah.
But again, like I find better options. So there's,
For sure.
It's a processed food, but there's no additives. So a Boulders brand does some really lovely potato chips that are made with avocado oil or olive oil. Yeah, so we're getting the good oils rather than the processed oils to use.
That's a great,
you know, to cook those potato chips in.
Yeah,
so they're probably my two biggest go-tos. Oh, and then the other thing I do, Danny, is if I'm going out for dinner for a beautiful restaurant, I eat dessert.
Perfect. I was about
and
to
I don't
ask
overthink
you that.
What's
like, do you
in
have
it.
Dessert?
I have something amazing.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At home, we have a lot of dessert, but it's all really healthy, homemade, clean eating, gluten-free, dairy-free desserts. Yeah. In fact, I even just had a dessert before I got on this podcast. I had a piece of my raw chocolate cheesecake.
Oh, yum.
Made out of cashew nuts and coconut.
Oh, my God. Please send recipe now.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. It's like a triple 12 chocolate cheesecake.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
But, yeah, when I'm out at a restaurant, I have to be strictly gluten-free, but I can have a little bit of dairy and sugar.
Yeah.
Occasionally when I go to a restaurant and I feel a little bit sluggish the next day, but occasionally fine.
I think that's important for like the listeners to know, because sometimes people go, but oh, I don't want to live like that. It's no fun. And I think it's important to know, no, like same with me. If I go to a restaurant, I'm not like tracking my calories. Yeah. I'm enjoying the company and the food and the dessert, and I'll have a wine. Like, and you know, yeah, like you said, you know what? I know I'm going to get home. I'm going to go, oh, I kind of wish I didn't do that. But at the same time, I had a good time. The next day I'm going to feel, but I always say we eat for four reasons, right? Nutrition, health, but socialization and enjoyment. And those two are really important as well.
Yes. 125%. Because you have to be social and live life. But we can just make healthier choices. Like there's just choices we can make that are better for us.
For sure. Yeah. And I think it's just not doing it all the time, right?
Yeah. And I always say too, Danny, on that to my clients, I say our bodies are very, very clever. Like they are clever. They can tolerate a little bit of processed foods. I can tolerate a little bit of dairy and a little bit of sugar, even though my body doesn't like a lot of it. You can probably tolerate a little bit of what were you saying is not good for you, white potato.
Oh, but also like I got to, if there's a beautiful curry with white rice, I'm not going to not eat it. I'll just have like a little bit, you know?
Yeah, they can deal with a little bit, but it's just if we layer those foods in that don't agree with us. I always say, you know, we have the foods that we love that love us back, but if we have those foods that don't love us back, don't layer them in every day because your body can't deal with that. But if you just have them a little bit occasionally, our bodies are very clever. They can deal with those small immune responses when they're just occasional.
Absolutely. And I'm very much, if I go out to dinner and, you know, overindulge and have my white rice and do all that and have a few wines, I just make sure the next few days or the next whatever are really clean, just to make my, you know, get my gut going again, make me feeling good, make my brain go feeling good again. You know, it's just about being smart.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much for this conversation. I feel like we could literally keep talking and have so many more chats about different angles. But do you want to let everyone know where we can find you?
Yes, please come and find me on Instagram at andrearobertson.health. That's also my website, www.andrearobertson.health.
Amazing.
No.com on the end, just a .health. And I have a Facebook group, so just search me under my name, Andrea Robertson, add me as a friend on Facebook, and then I can invite you into my group from there.
Amazing. Cool. And we'll pop all the details in the show notes, and I'll also pop the link to, was it a resource that we wanted to share as well?
Yeah, we want to share a diagram of the leaky gut. It's just a really good diagram. You can almost look at it while you're listening to my description of it on the podcast.
Perfect. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Danny.
Bye. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If something resonated with you, click follow so you don't miss the next episode, and send me a DM on Instagram at @thefigure_. It means the world to me to know that you're loving these episodes. If you're wanting more accountability and tools to implement changes in your life, head to the link in the show notes and book a free call with me. And if you want to get started right now, download our free resource, 5 Simple Things That Will Change Your Life. I can't wait to be back in your life next week. And trust me, you won't want to miss this episode.